week or 5 plus 3?
Five.
What's that?
Okay, Larry, I'm through.
Hopefully yours will be quicker than mine.
Shalom aleichem, good evening everyone. Shalom aleichem. And welcome to everyone, Kvod HaRabbanim, and all distinguished participants. Today's topic is going to be alternative medicine. The Pasuk says, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to heal. But the question we're going to address today is, who is considered a roife? And what is considered refuah? Does refuah include all those therapies, remedies, call them whatever, that are included in alternative medicines? Well, only conventional medicine is included in this mitzvah of Arape Yerape. The confusion and the controversy is even more because of the terms which are used to define this type of medicine. Some call it alternative medicine and some call it complementary medicine. And as you saw, they call it Refuah Mashlima or Refuah Alternativit. And it's not only semantics, the difference in definition. It's the whole way we look at it. Because if it's alternative medicine, that means that a person can turn away from conventional medicine and ignore or neglect what the doctor is telling him and go seek those other remedies which are included work which are called alternative medicine. On the other hand, if it's only complementary, that means he doesn't neglect what the doctor is telling him. He observes and he adheres to what the doctor advises, but on the other hand, whatever conventional medicine can't treat, has no answers, they try to look for answers in the other camp, which is called the Refuah Mashlima. As long as it's the complementary medicine, I think we professionals, rabbonim and doctors, can live with it. Because there are things which we don't have answers for. But when it comes to alternative medicine, then the problems come up. Because we have, as rabbonim, we have an obligation to see to it that people are mekayem the mitzvahs. Sometimes when in the course of the treatment, a person has to be over an issur, for instance, he has to take a medication which is not kosher, or he has to undergo a treatment on Shabbos or Yom Tov, or he has to eat Yom Kippur, which these are issurim. But when it comes to medicine, pikuach nefesh is doich everything. But the question is pikuach nefesh, treating pikuach nefesh, can it be done using alternative medicine? So both doctors and rabbonim are grappling with this question. I asked Dr. Schandorf to share with us some of her experience and her thoughts on this issue. Please, Dr. Schandorf.
Thank you very much for asking me to speak. I don't really consider myself a pioneer in this regard. My mother is also a physician and graduated from a class from the University of Toronto where there were only 4 women in her class. I'm going to speak very briefly. I want to define quickly what we think of as alternative medicine. I want to give a few examples. I want to just briefly mention why we think that patients look to other alternatives than what we have to offer. And a little bit about what kind of evidence that we have for the efficacy, safety of some of these approaches. So alternative or complementary and alternative medicine can include anything from particular foods and massages, herbal remedies, homeopathy, yoga, acupuncture, many of these things seem to us to be benign to, say, chiropractic neck manipulations, which could be fatal. So clearly, we have more than one attitude, depends on what we're talking about. Just in preparing this discussion, I was in the Jerusalem Post website and I saw an advertisement for Irina's Royal Jelly. A royal jelly seems to be some kind of honey. It's something that you get from a beehive. And this, I printed out this ad. It took 11 pages to print it out. And this substance is good for colic, hyperactivity, attention deficit disorder, acne, Down syndrome, eczema, colds, flu, poor concentration, morning sickness, and so on. Then, and all with anecdotes. When I looked for medical evidence about this on the, our medical software, I found nothing. They also, on the same ad, had a substance called aerobic oxygen, which to me was a little bit like on the Powery bottle said liquid hydration. As a hematologist, I know that you can bubble a lot of oxygen in the blood, but we do need hemoglobin to transport it, so that seemed kind of ridiculous. And again, I found nothing on the medical side. So some of these approaches are characterized by a lot of claims which are anecdotal, and no attempt to study scientifically, and a lot of poor science. I found an editorial in the Journal of the American Medical Association dated the 11th of June 2008, and so that's pretty recent. It was an editorial following a study of St. John's Wort in children with ADHD. And this was a well-performed study that found that St. John's Wort was not useful in this condition. The review of the editorial mentioned that there are more and more studies than previous ones. Past ones seem to be of poor quality. More rigorous studies more recently seem to have a lot of trouble coming up with positive results for a lot of these approaches. Why do patients want alternative approaches? Some patients are dissatisfied with our medicine. A lot of patients are not dissatisfied, but they would like something more holistic, more under their control, something they could do more actively. So I think that we need to think about this need and to try and meet it ourselves. One thing that we do have evidence for is a diet and exercise, which are elements that are under our patient's control and which are helpful in many areas, from heart disease to cancer, and which we should all be prescribing to our patients, in my opinion, in a very active way, and perhaps to help them put their energies towards things which are useful.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The point you mentioned about royal jelly is a good example. Royal jelly is not a honey. It's something which the part of the beehive produces as food for the queen. That's why it's called royal jelly. Now, royal jelly is not kosher. It's not kosher because it's not honey. Honey is anything that's produced by a non-kosher animal or insect is non-kosher. So why can we eat honey? But specifically, Heter in the Torah that says, "Dvash v'chol avtachas l'shem ko eretz zo v'schol ve dvash." So dvash is allowed, but royal honey is not. The royal jelly is not honey. It's another secretion of this insect, and therefore it's not kosher. So when it comes, this is a very good example of where the Rabbanim have a problem with alternative medicines, because there's no proof that this royal jelly is worth anything. On one hand, and on the other hand, people are taking it when it's not kosher. So this brings up the real issue at hand here. Is this medicine, is this legitimate or not? I also did some research and I found that there are about 150 therapies, remedies, all these type of medications, so-called medications, which are considered alternative medicines. I'd like to group them into three major groups. One is, it has to do with the patients taking these compounds, chemicals or herbs. They're similar to medication because people swallow them, drink them, like homeopathy, compounds, aromatherapy, other various types of medications. The second group are treatments which involve the body. They can be exercises like chiropractic, reflexology, acupuncture, and others. And then we have a group which have nothing to do with the patient's body, like energies. Energies in the body, energies outside of the body. These are basically supernatural beliefs, they call them superstitions. They have nothing to do directly with the body, and people believe in them. As they say, some swear by them, some swear at them, but they're there. So the question is, how does the Torah relate to all these treatments, approaches?
In the last category, it includes things like magnets and things. Is this the third category, or is that something?
No, that's even, it's even something which spiritual medicine, like witch doctors way back.
So where would you put the things like magnets and waves and rays?
No, this is something called healing, where the practitioner just waves his hand above the patient and he has an effect on him. This is something spiritual. It has nothing to do with this. Scientifically, there's no effect at all on the body. The problem with the third grouping is that some of them are real avodah zara, and avodah zara, which the source is from the Far East, over there, those countries are really of the avodah zara, idolatry, which is totally forbidden, even when it comes to pikuach nefesh. So let's take a look at the first source in Chazal, in the Gemara, which discusses this issue. There's a Mishnah. The Mishnah was written more than 1,500 years ago. The Mishnah in the Yomad Pei Gimel says, Misha Achze Bulmus, a person who has Yom Kippur Bulmus. Bulmus means probably hypoglycemia, where he faints because he doesn't have enough sugar in his blood. A person is allowed to eat anything, even non-kosher food, to save him and to bring him back. The second thing is, Misha Noshoi Kelev Shoita, a person who was bitten by a crazy dog, and that means probably rabies. We cannot feed him, taking apart from the animal's body and giving chutzrakul. Chutzrakul is the diaphragm. That's a part of the inner part of the body. We have a machlokes in the Mishnah here. It's very interesting. I think this is the first mention of immunotherapy, which is used for rabies, to give the patient some antibodies or vaccination to prevent the development of the disease. But way back in the time of the Mishnah, this was not a known medication. It was more of a refuah sgulit, maybe alternative medicine. So we have a machlokes in the Mishnah here. If a person who was bitten by a rabid dog can be given a piece of that dog to save him. And the halacha is, it's not allowed. But the question is, what is the reason we don't say pikuach nefesh? So for pikuach nefesh, this is a dangerous situation. We have to save him. And even by giving him a piece of non-kosher food, a non-kosher animal, we should allow it. So why does the Mishnah say it's not allowed? We have a machlokes here between Rashi and the Rambam. Rashi explains why does the Tanakhama, why is the halacha that it's not allowed? Although the Rofim use this medication, it's not a real medication. It's not really efficient. It doesn't work. And the Maki V'Chorish holds that it does work. So Rashi's approach is that the machloikas, that the argument between these two Tanoim is a machloikas in the facts. They argue as to the efficacy of this medication. Does it work or doesn't it work? And we all know when we learn Gemara that to say that there's a machlokes in facts is a bit difficult, because let's find out the facts. The Rambam has a different approach, a different explanation, and I think this is a very important principle when it comes to these issues. The Rambam says the machlokes, the Chachomim and Rav Matya ben Chorosh, is a machlokes in principle. The halacha is, says the Rambam, Ein Avrim al Mitzvah. We're not allowed to be over on any mitzvah when it comes to saving a person or healing a person. Eilu berefuah bilvad, only when it comes to medicine. Rutzalaymer, bedvurim hamarapim beteva, a medication which is known to heal in a natural way. Vehi dovar amiti, and it's a true medication. Hoitzioi hadas v'hanisoin akurav l'emes. It has been proven by logic. Means that there is an explanation why this medication is good for this sickness. The hanisoyin akur l'emes, and it was proven by tests which are close to emes, to the truth. Avol, on the other hand, said the Rambam, leisapis budvurim shem merapim bisguloson, only as a sgula. Sgula means the value is a supernatural value. Also, it's not logical. And the tests are very far away. The tests weren't done. And it's a tana, it's an argument from people who are mistaken. V'zehi ikar and Rambam. This is a very important principle. V'zachai, remember it. Kihi ikar. Kihu ikar gadol. It's a very major principle in medicine. So let's look carefully at what the Rambam is explaining here. The Rambam is explaining that a refuah sgulis, a refuah that is only a supernatural refuah, it cannot be logically explained why this is helpful here. And also it hasn't been tested and proven. It's not considered a refuah when it comes to isurim. So we have here two major conditions for a medication to be considered a legitimate medication. One is, it has to be logical. There has to be an explanation. We can argue if the Rambam means hoitzia hadas, common sense, or maybe scientifically proven. It has to have a scientific explanation. Maybe using microbiology to explain why this compound has this effect on the body, but in any case it has to have a logic. And the second condition that Rambam puts is it has to be proven. How it's proven, Rambam doesn't explain. And I assume that way back in the days of the Rambam, the tests required to confirm if the medication is a real medication or not, we're different than we are now. But in any case, it has to be proven. Nisyonon amiti has to have a real test which can be proven. Now there are the discussions of the Achronim. And many Achronim try to use this Rambam and try to take from this Rambam klulim and rules which would apply in our days. The Radbaz, who lived about 400 years ago, asks a question on this Rambam, and he says, if we understand right, the Rambam is saying that a refuah sgulis is not a refuah, and it can't be employed for anything. So ask the Radbaz, the Mishnah says that a person is allowed to go in Shabbos and Rishus HaRabim wearing Baitzas HaHarguk, an egg of a lizard, or shem shel shual, a tooth of a fox, or masmer shel tzaluv, a nail from a cross. Because these are done for refuah. And there's no question about it, all these refuahs are refuahs gulis. These are not conventional medications. And why, if we say that a refuahs gulis is not considered medicine, so why does the Mishnah and the Rambam also agrees to it, that if a person wears an amulet or talisman, whatever it's called, a charm on his neck, and that charm is made of this tooth of a fox, and it's a remedy for someone who can't sleep, or someone who has earache. So these are remedies which are refuas gulis, and the Mishnah allows it. So how does the Rambam say it's not allowed? Explain to Radbaz that there's a major difference between using alternative medicines or refuas gulis as complementary medicine than using it to be oiver and isur. For instance, when we allow a person wearing this type of necklace or this type of charm on his neck to go out on Rosh Hashanah, we say, you know what? Im lo yoil lo yazik. It won't help, but it won't harm anyway. So if he wants to use it, it's considered part of his clothing or a piece of jewelry, and it's not considered a chutzuah. It's not an isur to wear it on Shabbos. But we're not talking about being oiver and isur because of this medication. But in the Mishnah by Misha Noshchoi Kelev Shoyte, we have to allow two Isurei de Oiraisa. One is eating on Yom Kippur, and the second one is eating from a dog, which both are Isurei Toira. To allow to be Oir and Isur Toira because of Refuas Gulis, because of a medication that has no therapeutic value other than some superstition or supernatural values, this is not allowed. So this is the explanation of the Rambam. The Rambam feels that although the Torah allows a person to turn to alternative medicine, even in the grouping which is called supernatural remedies, it's allowed unless there is an Isser involved. And the Isser involved is, number one, what the Rambam is explaining when we're talking about eating non-kosher food, or eating on Yom Kippur. And when it comes to medicine, is also when a person is turning to alternative medicine and is going against his doctor's advice, and the doctor feels that what he's doing is damaging his health, that's also against the Torah. It's also an issue. So whenever an issue is involved, refuas gulis does not have the value of conventional medicine. It can't be doriche any issue. The Rambam mentioned two conditions. One condition is that it has to be proven. The other condition is that it has to be logical. Now the Achrayim have to do, or discuss at length, what happens when only one of the conditions are met. For instance, we take a refuas gulis, like a charm, an amulet, and we prove that it works, but there's no logic. We can't understand how it works. We don't understand why it works. But we see it works. The way to do it is, of course, if we use the same methodology that modern medicine uses to prove efficacy and safety of medications, if it's applied in a similar way to these alternative medicines. So if there's an explanation, then it becomes part of traditional medicine, conventional medicine. But if there's no explanation, like one of these supernatural things, energies or whatever, if there's an explanation, if it can be used and employed to heal, even when it's involved in this, sir. Yes?
How would you categorize a placebo?
Well, a placebo is a known effect of medications, and if I think when a medication has to go through all these trials, the FDA phase 1, phase 2, phase 3, and all these type of trials that have to be, these trials also weed out the placebo effect, because it's randomized double-blind studies which address the possibility of placebo effect. And of course, if we want to apply the same type of testing for alternative medicines, of course, this has to be addressed.
I guess I have problems with the Rambam classic categorization of understanding. Because your understanding is only as good as the model that you apply. And the model that you apply is only really designed to fit the facts of the observations that you make. So if the Rambam says, I understand exactly why this works. I mean, because there's green humors and blue humors and red humors, and he has a perfect logical explanation, except that we look at it now, he says it's Narishka. I'm sure that many of our basic understandings are correct, but many of them are probably not. So the criterion of understanding is only as good as the level of knowledge that you think you have.
Let's take a concrete example. One of the alternative medications is acupuncture. Now, acupuncture, when you look at it from the first glance, it looks nonsense. A person has some sort of affliction in his knee, and you put a needle in next to his ear, and all of a sudden, supposedly, it's healed. But I've heard that, maybe if I'm wrong, correct me, I've heard from that many times in chronic pain, acupuncture is used. Why? Because there is an explanation that these release some sort of hormones in the body, and they do have an effect. So we see that although this might be called an alternative medication, and has no explanation, but if you go deeper into it, we do find some clue biologically how this has an effect on a certain chronic pain.
But the Chinese will give you an explanation. They'll discuss it. They won't just give you an explanation on the model that models Western medicine, but they'll speak to you about meridians and pulses and qi, and the explanation will be excellent. You know, they have very, very clear reasons for the points that they choose.
Mm-hmm.
So is the Rambam demanding a Western type of explanation, or is it just demanding an explanation that fits a rigorous model?
That's a good question. The Rambam, let's take a look at the illusion of the Rambam. The Rambam said it has to be the Hiduva Emiti, it's a real explanation, Hoitzioi Hadas, that the logic agrees to it, or it can be. That's why I mentioned before when I said, I'm not sure if Dharma means common sense, which anyone can have his version of, or it means scientific sense. And scientific sense, of course, has to be an explanation. So getting back to the Mechloikas, there's a Mechloikas in the Poskim. What is the din when it comes to one of those Refuas Gulis, which has been proven? Many Poskim feel that according to the Rambam, Refuas Gulis in itself is a reason not to consider this as conventional medicine. Because it's something spiritual, and spiritual doesn't have to do anything with the body, with medicine. Others, Rishonim are chalik on Rambam, and they say that the real criteria is to prove its efficacy. And if it's proven that it works, it can be employed. One of the classic example is riding a kamaya on Shabbos. A kamaya is an amulet which sometimes have words or letters on them, and a person who is sick wears it on his neck, and this supposedly heals him. The question is, if you're allowed to write on Shabbos such a kamaya, this is a refuas gulis, but if it's proven to work, maybe it can be allowed. According to the Rambam, it can't be used. You cannot write a kamaya on Shabbos, because it's a refuas gulis. And refuas gulis, since there's no logical explanation why it works, even if it's proven, it's been done again and again and again, and for this specific affliction it works, you can't do it on Shabbos. And on the other hand, other poskim were chaylik on the Rambam, and they said the main criteria is the tests, proof, if it works or not. And if it works, whether I understand why it works or not is irrelevant. The main question is if it works or not. Nevertheless, the approach of the poskim nowadays is that we do not allow, of course, writing on Shabbos anything that has to do with spiritual medicine, because according to Rambam, it's not considered refuah. So let's take a look. According to the Rambam, a refuas gulis, that means any medication or any treatment, any procedure, which has no logical explanation why it should work, even if it's proven, which we still have to see any of those methods proven under rigorous testing as accepted nowadays, it can, according to the halacha, it cannot be used. And of course, if they're not proven, there's no question about it, they cannot be considered conventional medicine when it comes to Isurim. So this is to address the first group, which is Refuah Segulis. Any medication that doesn't have a direct effect, impact on the body. In addition to that problem, what I mean to say is the problem is only when it comes to Isurim, but if it's not any Isurim involved, it can be used. But many of these approaches involve Isur Avodah Zarah. And let me explain. And many of these healing or even what's called one brain is also, when you look closely at it, we're talking about energies that come from the Far East, and they originate from, according to these people who believe in them, they originate from all types of religions, beliefs, read about the Zarah, and they use all types of mantras and symbols, nigunim, anything that might enhance their experience. That this includes meditation, it includes Reiki, all these names which I'm really not really familiar with all of them. But many of these originate from the Far East, and they are real about the Zohar. So these are also in themselves, without having to eat or drink anything, which is non-kosher, in themselves, this is Bakol Nisrapim Chitz Me'avoy the Zohar. A person who is Pikuach Nefesh, a Chodesh Yesh Baskuna, cannot employ any of these approaches when it comes to healing. From here we go to the other two groups. Medications like herbal medicine, all types of teas, all these things which were not proven. And there's a halacha that says, the Gemara in Shechanorah says in Simen Kuf Nun Gim, Kuf Nun Hei, Kol Choyle Shemachilin Oisoy Yisr, any choyle that we have to give him something which is non-kosher, Tzrichem Shedhei HaRefuah Yedua, Oy Alpi Mumche, that's the Lushna of the Shechanorah. Here we talk about a medication which is not proven. It's a Sufik Refuah. The Rambam says that you cannot eat something which is non-kosher, the tzorek refuah, unless it's a refuah yedua, a known medication, or it's prescribed al pi mumche. What is a mumche? A mumche means a doctor. And what is a refuah yedua? A medication, an approved medication. The Mugen Avraham in Hilchos Shabbos, and Simen Kif Shin Kuf Ches Simen Sif Aleph, brings down this halacha in regards to Shabbos. Well, we have a chole sheyesh baskuna on Shabbos, and the only way to treat him is by a refuah she'eina yidua, experimental medicine, or a medication which is the source of the naturopathic approach, or for some other alternative medicine like homeopathy. Chilul Shabbos is not allowed. So if we have a patient here who says, I'm taking this medication, this homeopathic mixture, and I forgot it at home, and I don't have it here, and you want to send someone to go pick it up on Shabbos, you're not allowed, because it's a refuah she'eina yidua. Now the Achronim have a problem with this, because we have a cloud, sufik pikuach nefesh is derech Shabbos. You have to be sure about what you're doing. Number one, you don't have to be sure that this chole is a vadai, Mesukan, even if it's only a slight doubt that he might be the Geder Sakuna, you're Mechuyev to be Mechal Shabbos. And if you have a Sufik, if this medication will help to save the patient, again, we're allowed to do it, we're supposed to do it. So why, when it comes to Sufik Refuah, or Refuah She'eina Yedua, why is this a reason not to be Mechal Shabbos? Maybe it's going to help. 1% it might help. I know can be pikuach nefesh achar aroiv. Even if 90% say it won't help, but 10% say it will help, we're supposed to do it on Shabbos. So why is there a condition that has to be a refuah yidua? The Prim Gudim asked this question, and there's a lot of literature about this whole issue. The maskona is that sufik pikuach nefesh also has a limit. What is the level of sufik to be matir chilul Shabbos? You can't just say that there's a very slight chance or risk for danger, and then something wrong with the mic. And that might cause danger. I just turned it off. The level of danger that allows pikuach nefesh also has to be a reasonable level of danger. There are anything a person does.